Hey everybody, welcome back to the Founders Journal. You better get hyped because this week we got a sick episode for you.
Yeah, I'm so stoked for today's episode. Colin's like, I'm gonna get weird with this one. I'm like, all right, here we go. Anyways, if you guys could do us a huge favor and write us a review before you listen to this episode or after or during, we'd seriously appreciate it so much. And we're stoked for you guys to hear all the good stuff in this episode.
Yeah, I get impressed with every single episode in different ways, but for some reason, the purses and fashion, I am not into. Just ain't my thing. My mom matches my clothes still sometimes.
Shocking.
But I was overly impressed with this girl. Can't wait for you guys to hear it.
Yeah, let's roll the stats. Today we have a very special guest with us from Boulder, Colorado. Her website was in the top 15% of website traffic on Shopify for websites that started in the same week as hers. Completely self-funded her business. She's in the top 30 out of 120 in CU Boulder New Venture Challenge, which is a startup challenge at CU Boulder. She broke even on both product launches within 2 weeks, and she's worked with Instagram influencers like Kaylin Miller-Keys from The Bachelor and Ella Rose. So let's welcome Laura Vogel, the owner of Vogel.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Of course, we're so excited to hear your story and all things purses.
Yeah, absolutely. I just got one thing to say before you really get rolling is go Rams.
Whoa.
All right, you are good to start your story. Let's hear it.
Okay, well, I grew up modeling internationally, so I lived in Denver, I did some work in LA, and then I graduated high school a semester early, and I moved to Mexico City by myself, which was like a crazy risk that I took, but I kind of had nothing to lose and I figured I might as well just go for it. So I went and I already was so in love with the fashion industry, but I became like just so, it opened my eyes to a whole new world and an international world from that point as well. So I was kind of navigating the city in Spanish and working with all these designers who were from Mexico and they were from Guatemala and they are from New York. So it was just kind of a hub of all these crazy ideas, and Mexico City so art deco as well. So I was just exposed to so many things, and I found myself at every show and every photo shoot kind of leaving the model group and going over to talk to the business side and asking people their stories and how did you guys get to where you are today. And I did a show with Michael Costello and I asked him, and he was like, I was just that little boy with a flashlight under my blanket, like reading Vogue, and I just went for it. And you would think that people that make it that big have some crazy story, but most of them really don't after talking to them. So that was just really inspiring to see that, like, you can come from anything and be that. So I always knew that I wanted to have my own international fashion business and be on the business side of it instead of just making a career in modeling. So then I sort of stopped modeling and I went to CU Boulder and I enrolled in the business school and I studied finance and marketing, and I went to study abroad in Milan my junior year, so spring of 2019. And I kind of was just there having fun, not really thinking much about it. And then I lived in an Airbnb, so I wasn't in student housing, but I lived in an Airbnb on the Navigli Canal, which is the best place in the whole city. And my Airbnb, there was a motorcycle repair shop. Like, so in Italy, you have the apartment buildings and there's always a little open plaza in the middle. And somehow they built this motorcycle repair shop in the middle of that plaza. So my apartment was on the first floor and we were looking right out at it. So like they could walk up to our window and knock on the window. So they would always ask us to come over and have a beer and hang out. So we did. And so it was this really cool concept. So half of the repair shop was a repair shop, and then the other half was like this really cool bar. So while you were getting your motorcycle fixed, you would hang out in the bar and have drinks and all this stuff. And they were always repairing the motorcycle seats with leather, like this really nice Italian leather. And then they would use the scraps of that to make these sick motorcycle jackets and just leather jackets, and they would sell them upstairs. So I asked him, kind of like, where are you getting this leather? I mean, you guys are abroad. You know that when you're in Florence and Venice and Rome and Milan, I mean, it's just leather purse store after purse store after purse store. And it just kind of makes you think, like, it can't be that hard to get your hands on this high quality product. So then one day I just was with them by myself and I asked him where he gets all this leather and where they source it from. Because I was emailing some people in Italy and I called the Florence Leather Market, and everyone was just, I mean, in Italy, it's kind of like, oh, it's a family connection, or my grandpa does it, or my grandpa's friend does it. So it's kind of hard to break into that. And then my friend at the motorcycle shop said, oh, I'll take you to our atelier where we get it if you want to come. So I was like, sure. So we drove to an atelier. I kind of had no idea where we were going, but we pulled up to the north end of the city, kind of by the castle. And it was funny. We just went around the corner and then down all these tiny circle staircase. And it opened up into this kind of like a studio apartment, but he was just blasting music. I mean, there was leather on the floor, there was fabric on the floor, there was Vogue posters on the wall. He would literally just had his mattress on the floor and was just living in it. And then he had his fashion collection hung up on all these different hangers on his walls. So it was kind of everything you would expect it to be, but it was amazing in every way. And then he sources his leather from this other guy. So it was kind of like a chain that I had to backtrack through to get to the main manufacturer, but he got me in contact with his guy. So then I scheduled a meeting with him in the fashion district of Milan. And then he seemed really promising and he had great quality leather, but the problem was that he could only source me the leather. So then I had to also find the metal materials, the zippers, someone who could stamp it, someone who could assemble it, someone who could do the lining on the inside. And I was like, this is too big of a project than what I had initially hoped for. Like, I'm way in over my head. And then I told the atelier man that I had met, his name was Eduardo, I told him that I don't think it was going to work. I mean, it was great quality, but I just, with my time that I'm here and the money I have, I don't think this is feasible for me. And then I was leaving on June 4th to come back to the US, and I think it was like May 30th that he messaged me on WhatsApp. And he said, I have one more person that I think would really be great if you could meet him. And I said, okay, I'll go, but like, where is it? What are we doing? And he sent me a WhatsApp direction to take the metro to the furthest stop in the north of the city. So I was pretty much going to be on the metro for like an hour and a half. And then that was in a city called Arcore. So on the way to Lake Como, I guess. And then from there, this old Italian man that spoke no English was going to pick me up. When I came out of the metro, he was going to pick me up and we were going to drive another hour, half an hour-ish, to get to the house. So it was like sort of a big risk and I didn't really know where I was or who I was going to be with, and I didn't really know Eduardo that well, but I just kind of thought, okay, whatever, I'll go. So I got on the metro and then I met this, I mean, adorable old man. He was waiting for me at the turntables with a little sign and he was so cute. And then we drove for another 30, 40 minutes probably. So we were heading north to Lake Como, like that way. And I don't know what I was expecting, but I was expecting more of like a factory in a way. And then we just pulled up to this house. So we pulled up to this neighborhood. It wasn't much at all. And then we had to buzz the gate, and then this cute little man came out with two chihuahuas, like one in each arm, and he had these fur Versace slippers, and I was like, this is so great, we're gonna get along perfectly. And then he brought me inside, and I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't that. We went inside, and it was literally his house. I mean, his whole kitchen table was like jewelry boxes, wallets, purses, tote bags, shoulder bags, crossbody bags, leather slabs, zippers. Like, he had everything just in the kitchen. And then he just had, I mean, slabs of leather, boxes of finished product, like everything you could, it was like a dream. And he just went through everything. So pretty much I could have ordered any of the things he had finished. So he had Versace wallets without the logo on it. He had Furla bags. So you had all the products that he makes for these big brands, and that's how they operate. Gucci, Furla, Versace, they contract these small Italian leather artisans because that's where they get the quality from. But technically I could have ordered anything wholesale and just paid for it by unit, or I could have gone through the prototyping process, which is what I did, and designed my own piece with him. But that's what I loved about him, was he was able to assemble the entire bag. So he was able to do the whole thing, the whole production. So then I pretty much just asked him straight up, like, you have all these huge clients, would you be willing to take me on and at least try it out? And he was like, yes, of course, I think it would be great. And that's just the key to business, and especially business in Italy and Europe, is that face-to-face relationship. And so then I came home from Italy, and I ended up buying some similar shoulder bags on ASOS and Zara and Amazon, just to kind of see the designs and the measurements and what size they really were and that type of thing. Because when you're in Europe, everybody's wearing those small shoulder bags. I don't know if you guys noticed, but everyone's on the metro trying not to get pickpocketed, so they keep it really close to them. And I just loved that. And I thought it was really different. And really no one was doing it besides Prada for 1500 euros and up, and ASOS and Amazon for like $20, which is just fast fashion and a waste at the end of the day. So I was cutting up the bags I ordered, and I was literally like drawing on paper, which I have no experience with drawing or designing, but I was drawing it out, the measurements and the textures. I was looking up the textures. I had photos of all of his leather swabs and leather packs for each texture and color. So I was just designing it that way. And then he would send me photos of metals and zipper options and printing options and that type of thing. So it was just sort of a WhatsApp. It was just so casual, but I literally designed an Italian handbag that way. And then I would mail little envelopes full of scraps from the bags and photos and drawings. I would just mail them to Italy, and then he would go from there, and then we would talk about it and converse. And then we went through two different prototypes, and then the final one is what obviously I'm selling now. But that shoulder bag, that's their original collection. It's completely designed by me. And then we just, from there, once I approved the final prototype, then we went through the production process. And then I flew out to Italy in January and picked them up, and then the rest is history.
That is so cool. Oh my goodness. I'm like, wow, I need more designer bags now. So one question. So you said you picked them up. So this is just like a short little question. So do you have, you had to pay for all the bags up front? Like, it's not like someone orders and they make them?
So I ordered them, and then I would pay in 30% increments, and then the last payment was obviously 40%, but I would pay immediately when I ordered, and then I would pay once they were completed, and then I would pay once I had them and was happy with them.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, because we haven't chatted with anyone that does like international like business structure, so that's really interesting. So talking about your process of how you went about designing your product, like, where did you even start with the prototyping? And like, you know, how long was the turnover between like when you're shipping stuff to Italy? Was it a long process? I know you just launched in February and you've had amazing success, but you also started this journey like, what, a year ago?
So with the prototyping, I mean, the one thing that I was really surprised about was how expensive it is just to ship. So, I mean, I was shipping an envelope, and it would be $110 one way to ship it. So that was just something to keep in mind if you're looking into doing this. But the shipping was, I mean, it would take a week to get there. And then he would process that, and then we would converse about things. So the first, from when I left Italy on June 4th, so about 5 days after meeting him, to when I had the first prototype in my hands, was probably, I mean, I got the first prototype in the very end of September. So that's how long it took to get that one done. And then from September to the beginning of November, that's when I had the second prototype. But that's, I mean, that's because the two prototypes were so similar. So I think if I were to just scratch that one and then start again, it would take a while. But there really weren't that many edits to be made to the second one. It was mainly the zipper issue and then the printing issue. So that was 2 months between the two prototypes. And then shipping is about a week each way. And then when he made that big first order, that was about 40 days. But I mean, it's all handmade. So I could have looked into manufacturing in China to have a shorter production time and a lower cost and all of that, but I really just wanted to emphasize the quality I mean, that's what you're paying for when you buy one.
And I feel like that's part of your brand, like, you know, produced in Milan, Italy, that has like a designer ring to it.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, it's worth paying a little more and waiting a little longer, I think, for a super well-made product. And it's also, it makes me happy knowing that it'll last forever instead of last you a season and then end up in the trash, you know, so.
Totally. I mean, handmade quality, I mean, that's why it goes so far. You know what I mean? Like, that's why people pay more for it. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know anything about the fashion industry. Like, I think my mom still buys my clothes, you know, most of the time. I'm still wearing stuff from, like, eighth grade. So I don't know if I can see myself toting around one of your handbags. But one of the questions I had from someone that's in school and a perspective where you're at, I see a lot of young women going into school for being a designer or for fashion or for interior design and so on and so forth. And you did that without any schooling on design, which I think is interesting. And now you already have a final product. Would you say you would have rather, was it more beneficial to stick with business school and learn about the business part of it to make those connections and to get where you were? Or would you say that, you know, you're not sure, but it would have been good to go to designer school and learn some of those things?
That's a really good question. I think if I was doing clothing and like that, the more complicated designs, I would have really wished I would have gone to design school. The one thing that I'm really grateful for is that I have like 6 years of full-time modeling experience. So I've had people sewing clothing on me. I've sat in conversations, like sales meetings of people pitching why this product is worth buying and why, like, what makes this product better than this product. And so not really like an intricate design perspective, but I have a really good sales perspective, and I've seen the products literally be made, and I've seen the designers on set like making it the right way. So I have that experience. And then I think the business school experience is so, so valuable. I mean, you've heard it a million times, you can do anything with a business degree, which is so true. I don't know. I think my finance degree is what really shaped it, just knowing that, not from a design perspective, but going, I mean, this goes to your other question about the finances. And I don't know if that might have been before we started, but knowing that going into it, I would make my money back, or I had such a high chance of making my money back. The risk was a little bit lower for me that way. I do wish I had some more design experience, but at the same time, when I send my manufacturer, Antonio, something, he's not afraid to respond and say, I think that's going to look bad, or I think this would look better, I think this size would look better, or this leather material is not going to hold up as well as this one for this particular shape. So it's good to have that feedback from him, and I love how honest he is. But if I was making like clothing, not just like buying it and wholesaling it, but if I was like designing clothing or making things myself, I would have no idea what I was doing. So I think it's just sort of what level of intricacy you're going for. I mean, if you have a manufacturer that you have a great relationship with, I mean, he does this all day and he works with huge brands, so that's really helpful for me. But I think if I went in with just design and no business, I would be blind. Like, I would have no idea what I was doing.
Yeah, for sure. That's really cool that he is so honest with you. I mean, that's definitely makes you more confident than in your product too. Because I mean, I have one of your purses and it's very unique and it has like very classic look to it, which I think like helps it stand out. So I can definitely see why his input like was so valuable. So when you were creating your business and your brand, what was some of the biggest challenges and things that you didn't expect to come from it?
There's a lot, and a lot of it I think has to do with the international piece, obviously. The one thing I was so surprised about was how easy it is to just legally register a business. I mean, it's $50 on the Colorado website and it takes 2 seconds. So I thought I was missing something, but that's literally all it is. And then I think just financially, I was a little bit shocked in a way, because I mean, I opened a business bank account, so I had a line of credit there, and I fortunately have a great credit history, so I was able to get a larger line of credit. So initially, I assumed that I had, you know, X amount of dollars in my savings account, and I could work with that. And if I needed to, I could tap into the credit for that, which is what most businesses do. But then when I was started, because I have to internationally wire my money to him, I can't just like give him a credit card number or write him a check. I have to go into my bank, like go through all the security, get his bank SWIFT number, IBAN number. So there's no way that I can pay him with credit. So I have to have the cash in my debit or savings account and wire it that way. And then there's all the international exchange rates, and then his bank charges a fee and my bank charges a fee. So it was just a huge learning curve for that for me, and I really did it by myself. So that was a big learning curve. And then also just marketing. I mean, you think it would be easier to get a following on Instagram because as a person, and I mean, we all have so many friends and we have a following just naturally that way. But when you're marketing a product on Instagram, I mean, I know we follow so many business accounts, but it's kind of hard to get somebody to really follow your account and then stay following it. I lose followers every day, I gain followers every day. So that's been really hard also. And just pricing, I think, as well, like knowing where to price your product. It's a guessing game, but you have to look at competitors, you have to look at yourself, you have to look at, okay, well, the competitors are charging X amount, but I don't have that brand, I don't have that name, so I have to build up to that. And if you plan on going retail, which I eventually do, you have to be able to allow for like a 50, 60, 70% piece of the pie for them. So you still have to be profitable that way. And then taxes and sales and shipping internationally, and then customs. So I have to file for customs every time that I bring something in. And then they charge a percentage of customs, they charge a shelving fee, they charge a shipping fee, then I have to pay the customs broker. So there's just so many things that go into it that I had no idea about. And then once you have all that locked down, once you have the operations locked down, the marketing is the hardest part and the selling. So, and I mean, it's so exciting when I have an order from somebody that I don't know. You know, because you get that support from your friends and family. But then when you have an order from somebody in Oklahoma or San Diego, it's so exciting because somebody organically found that and liked it and spent their money on it. So the biggest challenges are just operations and financials, I think, especially dealing with an international manufacturing company. And then selling and marketing is just a day in and day out thing. You can't take a day off, really.
Yeah, I feel the marketing thing, you really truly would believe that marketing would be the easiest. Like, I was like, oh yeah, just like throw up an Instagram post every day, like I should like curate a lot of followers. No, it is so much work, and to like have it all like go together. So I just decided to pay someone to do that because I was like, I can't put my time into this, especially when you own a business, there's so many other places you have to put your time. So I know you just launched a month ago. So what did this last month look like? Like, how did you prepare for the launch of it? What were your feelings and stuff with that?
The initial launch or the last like pink?
Yeah.
The initial?
I guess both, honestly.
Initial one was in February. So that one, okay. I initially started out using Squarespace, which I think was a big mistake on my part. Just for a e-commerce website, I say 100% use Shopify. That's just a tip. But preparing for that was just so weird. I mean, I work at Nordstrom, so I'm selling other people's stuff all the time and hyping it up and saying it's the best product in the world. But to actually say that about something that you are selling and like yourself and your brand and something you created is a whole different feeling, and like to be accepting money from people for it. So I think it was just that whole nerve of, you know, doing the exchange and telling people why they should buy your thing and why they should buy your product and why they should spend X amount of money on it and how long it's going to last and that type of thing was hard. And I'm just learning every day. I mean, email marketing campaigns, generating a following, keeping that traction up, dealing with Instagram feeds, DMs, like which influencers to work with and how many products should I sell out. And this influencer had 1 million followers and I didn't get anything, but this influencer had 16,000 and I got so much traction from that. So it's just sort of a learning experience every day. But preparing for the launch, I mean, I kind of just let it go and I let it happen. And the first day, I mean, it wasn't a Kim Kardashian launch. I didn't sell out immediately, obviously, but it's just exciting to see it build, even if it's so slow. It's exciting to see it build from something you've created.
I gotcha. I mean, I don't even know, like I said, I don't know anything about fashion, so it's really interesting to hear someone talk about, like, a product and getting that just, like, you, like, the way I just thought about it was you literally just nod, like, if you're a bull rider and you just nodded your head, you just let it go, and you tried to hold on for 8 seconds, and it sounds like you did. I mean, you told me earlier it didn't take you, what, how long did it take you to turn profitable and make all your money back?
It took me, like, 2 weeks.
2 weeks, that's it.
Man, yeah,
that's incredible. Let me ask you this. How have you figured out how to keep track of all of those different financials? Because I think as a young person, we haven't had like a lot of bills to pay yet or a lot of stuff to keep track of. And I think for you especially, having a lot of different fees that the normal business probably wouldn't have because of the international piece. Are you really good about keeping track of all those fees and your money and where it is all going? And how has that kind of helped you? And what do you do and what tips would you give someone else?
That's where I'm thanking the heavens for my finance degree, because otherwise I would be so lost. Keeping track of your financials is the most important thing. I have an Excel spreadsheet where I have every single customer I've ever sold to, what they bought, how much they paid. I mean, I'm really, really proficient in Excel from my finance degree, but then I have the customer list and the purchase list, and then I have a full inventory list of how many I have, how many are sold, how many are left, what percentage is sold. And once I put what has been purchased, then that comes out of the inventory list and my percentage goes up. And then if I gave one out for free, that's color-coded. So I have everything laid out that way in an Excel spreadsheet, just inventory and sales wise. And then when you're calculating your costs, I definitely didn't do it the right way at first, but then I figured it out. So you take your per unit cost of just the bag. So like he sells me each bag for X amount of dollars, that's on there. Then I have my shipping cost for the whole thing. So then that's a one-time fee. The business registration is a one-time fee. Then I have to ship every product to every customer. So that's a per product fee. So you have per product and you have one time. Then I have my customs fees, packaging fees, so all that. Those one-time fees for each order, you have to divide by the number of products you have. So, because if you were to go into a sales meeting to pitch to a boutique or a Nordstrom, they would ask you how much does it cost to make one product. And that's not asking you how much Antonio's charging me. That's everything under the umbrella. And if you miss any of that and you're not charging that in your price, you're ultimately going to be losing money at the end of the day. So you have to have that. Yeah. So you have to, I mean, I have every invoice, every bill in a PDF folder on my computer. I haven't filed taxes yet because I've only sold in 2020. So that's going to be a bear in 2021. But I think if you're able to take your product fees and your one-time fees and just lay it out that way and really figure out how much it is to produce one product, then you'll have a way better grasp on what to charge and how to model your business if you're doing DTC or wholesale. Because if you're doing wholesale, you have to also leave room for that retailer. So you just have to sort of have a business model and then be really, really precise on how much it is to make one product. And I think once you have that, it's good from there. You just have to keep track of what's going on and where your money's going and how it's coming in.
I know that's something that I wish I was more like particular on when I started my business, because I was just like, oh yeah, like this can be sold for $6. Sure, let's do it. But talking about the future with your business, where do you see your business going? Do you plan on designing another purse model soon, or are you going to go do that down the road? Or what's your plan with that?
My ultimate goal is to be in a Nordstrom. So thankfully I've been working there for a while. I have a mentor at Nordstrom at the New York flagship. So we're talking about that and she's really guiding me on how to prepare for that. Even if it's a few years down the road. And then design-wise, I really want the shoulder bags to be the staple. I mean, you have every high fashion brand has that one product that's their staple that you can buy anytime. It's always there. And then I have the card holders that I just launched, which has been honestly really great because I've taken customer feedback that, oh, my wallet doesn't fit in these bags and those type of things. So to have those card holders has been really helpful. And then, yeah, I do want to design a bigger, almost like a computer size bag, and then a tote as well. And I'm sort of in the works with that with him. We're just seeing how sales go, and with coronavirus and that type of thing, maybe that's something we hold off on. And but yes, I do want to design a bigger bag, sort of laptop size, and then a tote as well. So those are definitely in the works and conversation.
Yeah, that, I mean, I feel like as you and just talking to you, I can tell that you're going to be very successful, and you already are a very successful woman, like, in your venture, and it's going to continue to grow, and I'm sure you're going to continue to scale and keep going. But one of the things that I want to touch on that maybe isn't so much business related, but it's more related to people our age, and I think the value of being cultured and studying abroad. So if you would just talk about how you, as a person, went over there and went there and met people that benefited you now, instead of doing what I saw a lot of people do, which was waste a lot of time doing stuff that you can do here. It was almost like they went there to see a place, and then the place was it. You went there for 5 seconds, took a picture of it, boom, and you left. Can you talk about the value of going over there and meeting people and your value of study abroad and traveling and being cultured?
Yeah, so I would say that has been the biggest piece of shaping me into who I am today. Like I said, I lived in Mexico City by myself when I was 17 for 4 months. And then after my freshman year of college, I was an au pair. So I was an international nanny in Madrid. So I lived with the host family there. And then I studied abroad in Milan. So I do have to say, though, I don't think I would have taken my study abroad, like, acted as mature as I did and so open to other people if I didn't have those previous experiences. So I think that waiting until study abroad, if you can, like, maybe try to travel a little bit before, but it opens your world to a million different things. And I know, I felt the same way. Like, I saw so many people just kind of group up and not talk to others and just be in that little friend group and go out and party and do it for the Instagram. And I mean, sure, that's a great way to do it, but what did you really take away from it at the end of the day? 100%. Yeah, so I mean, almost all of my traveling has been solo as well. So I'm just super courageous that way, I think. So
she's independent.
Yeah, so I mean, I've gone to South Africa, I've gone to Egypt, I lived in Mexico, so I'm just really used to that. And after I took my first solo trip, that's like changed the way I travel. And I always tell people now, like, travel by yourself, do one trip by yourself, like, just go for it. And I say that because if you're in a huge group of Americans, nobody's gonna approach you. But if you're by yourself at a restaurant or at a coffee shop or shopping or even just out at the park, I don't know what it is, but these international people, they're like interested and they want to talk to you and they want to know where you're from and they can tell you're from somewhere else. Like, obviously, even in Spain, you look American.
Yeah, you can't hide. Yeah.
Yeah. So they always just come up and ask me, like, what are you doing? What's going on? Like, where are you from? What's your purpose here? And I mean, I've made so many friends that way. I still talk to people from, I think, literally every trip I've been on. And then you'll meet people in Prague that are from Mexico, or you'll meet people from Spain that are from Paris. And I don't know, it's such a interesting, I don't know how to say it, like, network of international travelers that are just so curious about each other and curious about where people are from. And I mean, yeah, it's scary to, like, hop on a solo flight to the bottom of Africa, but then you meet the coolest people and you have the best experiences. And I don't know. I mean, I think it's just really important to be courageous about it. And it's scary to, like, go by yourself somewhere, but just get on a train to Lake Como or get on a train somewhere and just start that way. And then once you're by yourself on these trips, you'll be so much more interested in learning about other people and meeting other people. And I would not have had this opportunity if I wasn't so, I don't know, like forward with these guys at the motorcycle shop. And if I wasn't so forward with this family I lived with in Spain, like I wouldn't make these connections if I didn't go out of my way. Like this didn't just happen to me. And I was that person abroad that didn't go to every club and didn't go out every night. And I don't regret that. I mean, that's not who I am and it's not wrong to do that. But being alert every day and being aware of where you are every day and putting your phone down for a second is like the most beautiful thing and so much comes out of it.
You are preaching to the choir. Like I you print that out and you know I'll sign it at the bottom and be like this, I'm starting a petition, like people, I mean, like yeah. This is, people need to read this before they go study abroad, because a face-to-face interaction and what I said when I in my story was it's something that's being lost in this day and age. Mm-hmm. And the main thing I saw when people went over there was like, it's not about going there and seeing a place. It's about going there and seeing the people. And the people want to talk to you. That's something that in Europeans is way different than Americans. Like, we don't really care, like, what's going on with each other. Like, they're very aware and very cultured because they all live right next to each other. And it's all different in every single country.
Yeah.
They're very aware. And we're not. And so that was... that is a big learning curve, and you know it's awesome to hear that you've absolutely made the most of it. Like you probably have one of the coolest study abroad experience, well, traveling, etc., business things that I've heard yet to this point, and like I just want to congratulate you. Like you are going really far.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming on today. Yeah, thank you for coming on today and talking with us and our listeners about kind of international business and everything else of the sorts.
Yeah, I mean, it seems really intimidating to start one, but at the same time, the American market is so desirable. So if you have that dream and if you have that idea, it's out there. There's so many manufacturers in Europe that, and anywhere in the world that want to work and sell in America. So if you can pitch that idea and make it happen and kind of work your butt off a little bit, save up some money, it's totally doable.
Right. And I mean, is that your piece of advice? Like, what's your one piece of advice for someone that is looking to, you know, maybe get into international markets or in the fashion industry or et cetera?
Yeah, maybe specifically like the designer, like, you know, how to, you know, that market.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's tough. One piece.
What's something you wish you would have known?
I think the one thing that's really coming at me in my head is, it's not all done over email and it's not all done over the phone. You have to get out there. You have to meet people. You have to do things. You can't just Google manufacturers and expect to find the best one. You really have to go out there and get it. And travel's expensive, but you can make it work. I mean, flights to Europe are $400. So I think it's just wanting it bad enough, working hard enough, and putting yourself out there. This isn't going to just fall into your lap. So put yourself out there, kind of get rid of that what are people going to think of me type of thought scenario and just really go for it.
Amen. Amen. Well, thank you again for coming on and talking to us, and we appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. This was really great. I appreciate your time.
So I have an idea for you guys. I think you should go over and follow at the Founders Journal on Instagram. Because you're going to want to keep up with us. Me and Sid have been working on an addition to this podcast that's going to give young entrepreneurs a ton of power in your hands. So make sure you follow along with us. Go give us a follow. That'd be huge.
Yeah, I'm so stoked for the addition we have coming. But did anyone else realize that the stuff that Laura just said is like exactly what Colin said? Like, a few weeks ago in his episode, like this chick is literally a spitting image of Colin.
I don't know about that. Come on.
Spitting image. I guess I should say they say the same things and they've never met. Like he didn't even know her story before we recorded.
Yeah. I honestly had no idea who she was, but I'm impressed. Laura, great minds think alike. That's all I got to say.
I love it. Anyways, next week we have a baller gal coming on. I'm so stoked. Like I can't even believe she recorded with us. Like, I'm obsessed with her.
Sydney's girl crush.
Yeah, literally Sydney's my girl crush. If you're listening, Ashton, you know what's up. But we're stoked to have her on. So get pumped for next Monday's episode.
See you next Monday.
Bye. Peace.